Welcome to Learned Lag, a podcast about yesterday's Learned League questions and answers. I'm George.
And I'm Amanda. George and I are both in Zephyr A. This is season 32 for George and season 28 for me.
This is day 24 of season 100, the penultimate day. First question asks us for the name of France's oldest national daily newspaper and gives us some other clues.
Right. Notes that it's named after an opera character. And that there are at least two adaptations of works about this character. So, a sly and subversive character, it notes. And so this essentially was just me thinking of French opera characters that could be French newspaper titles, which is, you know, slim to none. So, and of course, I had to, of course, brush away the instant response of like Le Monde is means the world. So I know that that's not what this is going to be. It did not take me long, though, to kind of figure a sly and subversive character. Well, Figaro from The Barber of Seville and The Marriage of Figaro would seem to fit that because he's kind of a prankster and is, you know, his operas are comic operas. They're, you know, about his funny, you know, activities. And so sly and subversive kind of fits the bill too. They're very, you know, puncturing of, the highfalutin type of person. So, and once I thought of Figaro, I thought, yeah, I think I've heard of, a French newspaper called Figaro or Le Figaro or something like that. But I just put down Figaro thinking that would be sufficient.
I kind of did the same, except I don't actually know anything about Figaro.
Oh, okay.
So I just, yeah. I dismissed Le Monde and then just kind of let my mind wander about French newspapers that I've heard of. Okay. Opera characters who would be, and then just Figaro sort of bounced into my head unbidden. And sometimes that's just what you get.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just decide, no, this one thing isn't correct, so I'll go with, so I'll just let my mind wander, and it popped in, and I thought, yeah, I'm pretty sure that Figaro is a French newspaper. I don't remember the last time I saw it cited anywhere, but you know, that sounds right. Is that Italian? It's got to be an Italian newspaper, right? That sounds like a much more Italian name. but still, I'm pretty sure that Figaro is French. So, or the newspaper, at least. I feel like I've heard of it in that context. So, okay, yeah, I'll say Figaro.
And that is the correct answer. Le Figaro, technically, but articles don't matter, we know. Mm-hmm. And
I got credit for Tarantello the other day, then I'm good on all the foreign words from now on.
Apparently, yeah. And I would say, too, I tend to forget like how much overlap there can be between French and Italian, just because, I mean, they're right next to each other. Like they're going to have shared and loan words and stuff like that. So yeah, that one was, not too hard to pluck out, so to speak. Question two asks us, about a dance craze of the 30s and 40s popular during the swing era that comes from an event in 1927.
That began in Long Island and concluded in Paris.
Yes.
A lot of France today.
Indeed.
This just all gelled together for me as I was reading the question as, oh, this is about Lindbergh's flight. There's a dance called, oh, the Lindy Hop. Okay. Is it the Lindy Hop or is it just the Lindy? Lindy Hop or Lindy? Well, Lindy, I feel like I've heard both. Mm-hmm. So I incorrectly, well, not incorrectly, but foolishly, I forgot that when the computer sees the correct answer, it stops. So if your choice is between Lindy Hop and Lindy, go with Lindy unless there's something, or go with Lindy Hop unless there is something in the question that specifically says what five-letter dance or what one word or something like that.
Sure.
So I just said Lindy.
Ah.
And I forgot.
I see. Yeah, I thought of the Lindy Hop pretty quickly because this was Lindbergh's flight across the Atlantic that we are referencing with Roosevelt Field to Le Bourget. And the dance craze I had definitely heard of. I knew it was the Lindy Hop. Although I'm not sure that Just Lindy is incorrect, so...
I did check on Wikipedia, and the article on Wikipedia uses the two terms more or less interchangeably.
Okay.
So...
So I think that you have a good shot at actually getting it correct there, because I've heard both. Just that the Lindy is kind of short for the Lindy Hop, but of course that's... The hop part of it is the hop over the pond, so to speak. Yeah. And so I did put down Lindy Hop, the two-word phrase, and is pretty confident about that one. Yeah.
And that was correct, Lindy Hop specifically.
Indeed.
Question three asks us for a name in the title of the most famous work of Johann David Wyss.
Yes, and describing the adventures of a family. And Wyss is noted to be born in Bern, which is a city in Switzerland. So we're talking about a Swiss family. And if I think of a Swiss family, Robinson is going to come right to mind.
Sure.
Now, what's I certainly didn't know this fact about the family doesn't actually have this name, which is kind of wild to me that it's part of the title of the books. But again, Swiss family and Robinson are kind of a knee-jerk, you know, pair for me. So I figured if it wasn't this, then it's something much more obscure than I've ever heard of. So I went with Robinson.
Same, all that. Yeah. I saw Burnborn and say, okay, Thorsten is trying to avoid saying something.
Right.
He is trying to avoid saying Swiss or even Switzerland. He wants you to have to figure something out a little bit deeper than just Johann David Wyss's most famous work.
Right.
And yeah, be mistaken to have what name, because it's in the title, and I believe that is an is it an allusion to Robinson Crusoe?
I don't know.
Or did that even come out after that? Because 1812 is kind of early, I feel like.
It is.
Was Defoe writing at that point?
I don't know.
Is that around that same time? Did that just kind of become, you know, but it later? It says it's in the book's title, not just that it's, you know, it became that later. So, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, same thing. As soon as I saw Swiss, as soon as I figured out that, oh, this is an allusion to something Swiss, then it snapped into place that, oh, this has got to be Robinson.
Mm-hmm. And indeed, that was the correct answer. And I just want to... make note to all our listeners that this is how you can tell that we rarely do any kind of thorough preparation for this podcast.
No. Yeah, we don't.
You know, if you guys want to know the answers to these things, you got to go Google it, because
I'm looking at the Wikipedia now, and in fact, yeah, Defoe wrote Robinson Crusoe in 1719.
Oh, okay.
I had no idea it was that early. So.
Okay. And yeah. is it a reference then?
Yes, it is. In fact, that there's sort of a genre of stranded on an island...
Sure.
Literature that is known as Robinsonades.
Oh, okay.
So it was very much a direct reference to,
gotcha.
To that.
Got to keep that filed away for a future
could be.
Trivia question, I'd say. Yeah. Question four asks us to name two cities, one in Montana, the other in Arizona, that denote similar geographical features.
I was barely awake when I started reading these and looked at that, and I just thought, okay, I'm not going to get this unless I come at it from another direction, so I'm going to have to think cities in Arizona, Flagstaff, there's Phoenix, there's Tucson, okay, what's in Montana? Cities in Montana, Butte, Mesa, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Mesa being the city where my parents live.
Yes.
And have lived for most of my life. So that one snapped right into place as soon as I had the counterpart, Butte, Montana.
Yeah, similarly, Butte came to mind right away because that's in terms of geographical feature names in Montana, that one's pretty prominent, like, so to speak. I know that it means kind of this raised tableland, which is very easy to draw the line to Mesa from that. And of course, I do also know that your parents have lived in Mesa for many years. So that's fairly top of mind as a place that exists and is named after that geographical structure that is pretty similar to a butte. In fact, I don't know if there is technically a, well, it says distinguished only by their size, so I don't know even which is the smaller or larger necessarily. But they definitely, like, I know the characteristics of them as far as kind of a cliff-like structure and then a flat plateau on top. So I put Butte and Mesa as well.
And those were correct. And for those of you who may not have gotten this, we have one of the people in our friend group did not get it because he does not know what Mesa is. He didn't think of Mesa, at least. It didn't come to mind. And it reminded me that, yeah, it is the 36th largest city in the United States. It is larger than Atlanta.
Wow.
Population-wise. Just barely. But it has more people than Atlanta. Not metro area, obviously. It is part of it.
Sure.
It is the largest city in the country that is not a county seat.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And it is a suburb. For those of you who have never been to Mesa or learned about it or anything, it is a pure suburb. Like, I honestly have no idea what there is in that city. And I have been to that city. I have lived in that city for months at a time. My parents moved there after I had moved out of the house, but I lived there for a couple summers in college, etc. So I've been there. I was there beginning of last year. And there's nothing. It's 136 square miles of housing developments and strip malls. That's all it is.
Wow.
I have no idea what the industry of that city is, if there even is one. I think it might just be a pure bedroom community for Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about it today. I'm like, I don't know whether there's 500,000 people in that city.
Uh-huh.
More than that, in fact. I would be hard pressed to, well, I certainly can't name, and it would not surprise me to find out that there are no buildings over four stories in that entire city. It's just unrelenting flatness.
Sure.
And gridded out. There's no geographical features. They got to go around. I don't think there's a mountain involved. I don't know what the Mesa was, but it ain't there anymore. It's just...
Or is it on top of the Mesa?
No, because you don't go down into any of the other areas. It's just...
Okay.
Whole valley's flat, but especially Mesa's just nothing. Just a whole lot of nothing.
Sure.
If you did not get this out there in listener land, please do not think that you missed something.
Right.
Even though Mesa is a remarkably large population-wise city, it is nothing. It has nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, I'm going to say its industry is places to live for retired people.
Pretty much, yeah. It's not all retired people. It's not like...
Retired people.
But I mean, there's... my parents lived there before retirement for a long time. It's just houses and strip malls.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. Mm-hmm. I think there's one... Well, when I
spent some time there
30 years ago, there was like a mall, but that was pretty much it. Yeah, there's tons of hospitals and the like.
Sure.
I don't think there's anything else. It's the purest suburb I've ever been to.
Wow.
Anyway.
Yeah.
That was the rant for this episode. There we go. Question five, moving on, tells us that Jean Piaget is remembered for work pertaining to a particular cohort. He's a psychologist and wrote a book called The Origin of Intelligence in blank.
So interesting how we've got all the French and Swiss content. Yeah. 4 out of 6 questions today.
Yeah, a lot of it.
But this is one where my initial thought, and I was a psychology major in college, so I got to have some, background for this one. I originally thought, well, we're talking about the origin of intelligence, then we've got to be talking about like babies or infants. So my initial thought was babies, and I was like, well, he's a scientist, so he'd use more technical term like infants. But then I thought, I don't think Piaget was limited to that narrow of a range of childhood. And so I sort of checked my thought process there, and I thought the origin of intelligence in children would make sense because, infants are very just developing their intelligence. They don't have that kind of higher level of what we would think of as intelligence so much as potential, I guess. So I thought the origin of intelligence in children. Yeah, I think that sounds right, that we're talking about a child psychologist, and I don't think it was limited to, you know, young infants or toddlers or anything like that. I think children would be the right term here, so that's what I put down.
Yeah, I immediately thought, okay, this has got to be like young people, some form of children, yes. Babies, infants, etc. I briefly detoured away to like, maybe it's like animal psychology, like maybe it's some kind of primate or, you know, monkeys or something like that. But then at the same time, I feel like describing non-human animals as having intelligence would be something that not necessarily a psychologist would be known for. True. And it wouldn't necessarily be a seminal work, like, you know, the book that is the main primary work on, you know, intelligence in chimpanzees or whatever, I feel like would first have to prove that there is such a thing, and
sure.
would be much more controversial than simply being a seminal work. Because there isn't like a whole field of chimpanzee psychology that would have, you know, that. Like, there's a lot of child psychology.
Yeah, I get what the terms are different,
yeah,
you're saying.
Yeah, when you say seminal work, that indicates that there's a whole field there.
Yeah.
Rather than kind of a narrow band of a field.
Sure.
And I know there's a lot of people who study primates, but not necessarily, like, I just feel like psychology isn't really the way you would describe that.
Yeah.
You wouldn't describe them as a cohort. So I kept steering myself back to humans and saying, it's got to be, for the origin of intelligence, it's got to be some form of children, babies, infants, teenagers, who knows. who knows when he decided that people begin acquiring intelligence. But then I figured it can't be babyhood. It can't be the origin of intelligence in babies.
Mm-hmm.
Because babies in and of themselves are incredibly dumb. and will cheerfully crawl off of anything you put them on. Any sort of mesa or butte or the like. They'll just right over the side. So it's got to be a little bit later. It's got to be children. It's not going to be like tweens or toddlers even. Because origin also to me connotes kind of the beginning of a thing that's done. Like children can be said to be intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Because children is a much wider span than toddlers.
Right.
Like, you wouldn't say the origin of intelligence in toddlers. You just say, like, you know, this is the beginnings of this stage in overall humans. So this is a very long way of me saying I tried talking myself out of children into anything that might be slightly more specific, and just kept rejecting that and saying, no, you wouldn't want to be more specific. You just want to go with just children. So I figured, okay, even though it's translated, presumably translated from another language, probably what he's going for is just children generically, the sub-adult human beings. So I'll say children.
And that was the correct answer. I think what might have made your thought process work a little easier is the word cohort.
Yeah.
I think that was part of the key
that too.
There too.
Yeah.
But I think you're right.
You could say that toddlers are a cohort.
Oh, yes. No, I mean the non-human part.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah, that kept pulling me back as well.
Yeah.
The use of psychologist and cohort in the question kind of
kept
pulling me back to, no, this is a standard kind of psychology that we're talking about. It's not...
Yeah, human psychology as opposed to animal behavior.
Right.
Because a lot of animal behavior, you don't want to impute psychological meaning or mechanisms to.
Yep.
You're just trying to observe what you can see. So, moving on to question 6, we are asked to determine what company graphic designer Susan Kare worked for and achieved fame in the 1980s with her work there.
Wow, the hints of a dog cow named Claris and a smiley face graphic of the company's signature product at the time. Just did not land with me at all. This is just
me
one
either.
That I was never going to get to. I just kept trying to think of companies that would have had a smiley face graphic and would have a dog cow, whatever that is. I assume it's a just kind of a weird combined dog and cow sort of thing. So that led me to like Chick-fil-A. They have cows in their advertising.
Sure.
Nickelodeon. I feel like they had like a cat dog cartoon at some point after I was that stopped watching cartoons. And just nothing came to me that could have worked there. And finally, I just kind of threw my hands in the air and said, well, a company that would have had a signature product with a smiley face graphic on it, it employed a graphic designer. I know that Nike famously had a female graphic designer who came up with the swoosh, at least. So maybe Thorsten is dancing around that. As, you know, artifacts that remain popular today. I couldn't remember what her name was, but, you know, for lack of anything, I don't even want to say better, but lack of anything else that just seemed to satisfy those criteria, that would have those things as part of its graphic package, I said, okay, fine, Nike then.
Yeah, this one led me down a very different incorrect garden path where it kind of faintly tickled me. Like I felt like I'd heard that name, and so I figured it was for a product that I had used in much more day-to-day life than, you know, it would be something that not only was I very familiar with, but also kind of had made a splash graphically in the 80s. And so, you know, initially I was thinking of things like Lisa Frank products. I thought of Sanrio, but I thought that won't be someone with an American or English sounding name. You know, and also they don't really have like a signature product. They have lots of little tchotchkes and stickers and all sorts of things. But there isn't an iconic single thing that says Sanrio. I thought about Trapper Keepers. I thought about toy companies. And finally, I looked at these clues about the dog cow and the smiley face graphic. And again, those also suggested to me something fairly flamboyant. Something that was bright and colorful and graphically eye-catching. And so I thought, you know, the dog cow idea, maybe that's some kind of, like, indicates some kind of dairy product such that it would be something, you know, fun and colorful. And then the smiley face is something I associate with sort of like 60s hippie culture or maybe 70s. But that's just, I'm picturing, when I see a smiley face graphic, and maybe this is even turning into a slight quibble or even rant, I think of the yellow circle with the two dots and the curve for the mouth. So to call something a smiley face graphic that doesn't really have the color or the shape in quite that way is a little, you know, that's a little potentially misleading, or at least it was to me. And so with all that in mind, though, I thought, well, Ben and Jerry's is kind of a hippie-ish company. They have a distinctive graphic style to their packaging. Would it be out of the question that they had a dog cow as part of their logo? No, that entirely tracks with their, you know, mashing things up into their ice cream products. And maybe they had a dog that was kind of the mascot of the company for a while that they combined with a cow because, you know, they're a dairy products company. So the smiley face with the hippie, you know, association with it, you know, they have all those like Grateful Dead associated ice creams with the Cherry Garcia and Wavy Gravy. And I thought, okay, this kind of ticks all the boxes that my brain had laid out to be ticked based on what the question was discussing. And so that was my supremely impeccable logic for putting down Ben and Jerry's.
Reasonable. But it was Apple Computer.
Yeah, okay.
Which, okay, yeah, I still don't know what the cat dog thing was about.
dog cow. Yeah.
Dog cow thing was about. Even what animals were involved. The smiley face version, that I remember very clearly from turning on Macintoshes back in the day.
Right. So, and it's reasonable. Especially like that little stand-up one that was the kind of little vertical box thinner that it was a graphic of. I still, you know, I know that to describe it any more like that would have kind of given away a lot of what the question is asking. But if it had said a smiling face graphic instead of a smiley face graphic, which is a specific iconic thing to me, I would have, you know, I would have felt like I had a little fairer shot at getting this one, but also I just didn't really know it. So now I'll maybe know it for next time. I'll try to remember that Clarice is the dog cow, cause that might be the angle that we're asked.
Sure. Yeah.
In the next question about this,
Claris created by a cow. Yeah.
Or what was the name of the dog cow that Apple designer Susan Kare created?
Yep.
So I had 5 out of 6 on the day. That's I think I kind of maxed it out because I don't think I was going to make it over to Apple because only one of those do I recall seeing personally. So. I just got to hope that it's something that people would think a Gen Xer like myself might know.
Indeed. Well, that's it for this week. Tune in on Tuesday for the ultimate day of season 100.
Indeed.
We are both safe from relegation.
Huzzah.
But we'll see how it goes.
Right.
And follow us on Blue Sky @LearnedLag, now with all the vowels. And remember,
don't forfeit.
Don't cheat.